Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening. We are so happy to welcome you back to another adventure in history.
And it's just us.
It is. It's kind of nice and quiet.
See, I was going to say that. I mean, I like the guests, but yes. there's a niceness of just you and me in the room. And even though we have thousands upon thousands of listeners, it's really just you and me talking to each other.
It is.
So.
You know, that when I went to journalism school, they always said, you know, picture yourself just talking to one person. Oh. You know, like when you're looking in cameras with broadcast journalism, not the, you know, tens of thousands that would be watching, just one. But definitely know there is somebody out there listening and watching.
And would the professors also say that was the same for public speaking?
Oh, I did take quite a few public speaking classes, but I don't remember. And I never got the, you know, picture everyone naked or picture everyone in their underwear.
That's just stupid.
It is. Terrible. I don't want to picture people like that.
Although I have to admit, and I've never said this publicly, so it's a little embarrassing, but I gave a talk once to the Columbia Memorial Hospital doctors. Like they have a monthly meeting, I guess, for their staff. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to come and give a talk. And I had just had my annual physical. And the doctor was like right in front of me. It might have been a trip to urgent care. It might have been my doctor. I won't confess.
Yes.
But it was very embarrassing because they
were. That person. Though.
Oh, I'm sure it was not for them. I think they're trained. But all I could think was, wow, I was just in your office.
Yep.
Very stripped down. Yep. And now I'm standing 10 feet from you talking.
Well, yeah, that
happens. It was not good.
Again, just for you. Doctors, they don't care.
So that would not work for me. The whole like Brady Bunch picture them in their underwear.
Yeah.
See, I always, for public speaking, I always try to, and I feel a little badly because I think I unnerve sometimes, but I pick like three or four people that I'll make sure I'm looking in different places in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So I meet their eyes frequently, and they might be like, why is this guy looking at me?
Oh, that's a good tip.
But there that way go. I'm not just staring straight ahead, or I'm not just staring down at my notes.
Okay. So, all right. Eye contact. I don't know. I don't know that eye contact I would ever.
Would your professors frown upon that?
I think I would. Because you don't want to get distracted either. Because what if that person starts wanting to tell you something?
They wink at you or something.
Right. Like, oh my gosh, did you really just say that? Like, what did I say?
That's funny. So let's get rid of the history highlights. And I got to set this up.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of explaining to do for this show. Oh. So let's get rid of the history highlights. These are the things that happen tomorrow, February 7th. Not that many.
I know, I didn't see.
It was kind of a hard one. 1943, shoe rationing begins in the U.S.
Oh, shoe rationing for the rubber?
The leather.
Leather.
The shoes, yeah.
Okay.
1964, the Beatles arrive in New York for their first U.S. tour.
I saw that. 25,000 fans. That's a lot of people gathered at one time with no social media. I mean, they knew they were coming.
That's true.
They were at the airport. Mm-hmm. 25,000 people.
That's just a little bit less than they're listening to us.
Right.
The Beatles,
didn't care.
That's right. And on their first tour, that's the amazing thing.
Yeah.
1969, The Who records Pinball Wizard. Now, I once saw, I can't remember, and I've searched for it, but somebody I saw once said, Pinball Wizard is really just the theme from the Beverly Hillbillies. And they really are kind of interchangeable. You can sing either one to the same like cadence and tune.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. But our history highlight of the day, the thing I think had the most impact that I could find on this day, 1962, U.S. President Kennedy begins the blockade of Cuba by banning all Cuban imports and exports.
Yep. That's a good one. Yeah.
What I missed.
1963, the Mona Lisa is put on display at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York.
Oh.
Kind of neat. Traveled all the way over here. And then birthdays, 1812, Charles Dickens. He wrote
The Dickens, you say.
Yeah, Oliver Twist, A Christmas Carol. I played his sister in A Christmas Carol, in a play. Tale of Two Cities. And then also 1867, Laura Ingalls Wilder. Little House on the Prairie.
Was born?
Yep.
Oh, I might have made that my history highlight of the day.
1867.
It was I missed that.
Kind of huge.
Wow. Now, have you actually ever read any of the books?
Every single one of them.
Have you?
I did.
And how does that translate to the TV show?
It was a long time ago that I read them, so I was young. I was a kid. And I liked both. So when I started reading them, I wanted to read them all. Mm-hmm. And they are similar. They're very similar, but obviously mm-hmm. they made a lot of just shows, right? So, yeah.
See, I feel like I missed out by never reading any of them.
Oh, yeah. They're really, I mean, since they are for young adults, I think you could get through it, Mac.
I probably could.
Probably pretty quickly.
There's a lot of things that I missed that I've started to go back and read again. Okay, but something I do miss occasionally, but I do watch it frequently, is the show Jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
And as you and loyal listeners know, I reference Jeopardy a lot in terms of this might be the final question on Jeopardy, and you owe us if
that's true.
I gave you the answer. But there was just one of the biggest streaks. She didn't win first because that's still Chris Jennings, but she did like 40 days without losing.
Yep.
Which just astounds me that you have to answer like 1,100 questions.
And the first woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And was like the number three cash winner four cash winner, and number three in terms of streak. So that's just amazing to me. My goal, I'd love to be on Jeopardy and just never answer a question, but always look like I knew the answer and I was just too slow on the ringing in button.
Yeah. Well, don't you feel a little sorry for some of the people that went up against her? Because they're like, wait a second, I just wanted some normal smart person, yes. Not the second winningest person the ever.
Super genius. Right. And there were. I didn't watch all 40 episodes during this streak, but I probably watched like 15 or 20 of them. And there were some actually pretty good contestants. So I was like, wow, under normal circumstances, you would have won.
They would have been the winner. Oh.
And they should be invited back, I think.
Hopefully.
Like, given another
show. I don't know how that works. And it's the new hosts now, too.
Yes.
So it's Maya and Bialik,
yes,
who
I love. I love her.
Yep. And then who's the other?
Ken Jennings.
Oh,
the guy that won the most.
How fun for him, too.
I kind of like the two of them. I hope they don't pick one over the other. I hope they let them continue.
It sounds like that's
what's switch on and off.
Going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great.
So I thought we'd do a little something fun.
All right, Jeopardy.
So first we're going to get rid of the history of Jeopardy.
Let's get rid of it.
So we can set the stage.
Okay.
So Jeopardy has been around in its current format since 1984 with the same host and the same familiar style of gameplay up until Alex Trebek passed away, of course. But its history goes back to the 1960s. It premiered in 1964 and was created by the game show king of that era, Merv Griffin.
Who created, like, everything, right?
Yes.
Jeopardy is consistently one of the highest-rated shows in syndication across the country, airing every weeknight on local affiliate networks. The show has gained a cult-like following among trivia buffs, like our very own Mac Burns, and game show fans. The theme song is instantly recognizable and has been used in a wide variety of media, from comedy sketches to major motion pictures. How it all began? Well, in the 1950s, there was growing frustration from the public with quiz shows. Scandals were erupting and producers were being accused of providing answers to contestants and rigging the results. Jeopardy was an answer to this frustration, attempting to provide a departure from traditional quiz shows by asking contestants to give their answers in the form of a question. The show caught on and enjoyed a successful daytime run from 1964 to 1975. The original Jeopardy game show was hosted by Art Fleming and aired on NBC. After 11 years on the air, the show was canceled. Jeopardy enjoyed a brief one-season revival in 1978 and was once again canceled because of poor ratings.
But the new Jeopardy in 1984, CBS picked up the show and transformed it into a primetime program with a brand new host, Alex Trebek. At the helm, Jeopardy returned in syndication in 84. The show has been on the air ever since, airing five times a week on local CBS affiliate stations. So some fun facts.
Fun. Jeopardy airs in various international versions in more than 25 countries.
Before 2004, a contestant could win a maximum of 5 games. I never thought that was fair. After winning a full week's worth of shows, the contestant was retired and guaranteed a seat in the next Tournament of Champions. This rule was eliminated in the show's 21st season.
Ken Jennings is the record holder for the longest winning streak. Jennings won a whopping 74 games in 2002 before being defeated in Final Jeopardy by Nancy Zerg. He accumulated $2.5 million in prize money during those 74 appearances. Not too shabby.
Not too shabby. A spinoff show called Rock and Roll Jeopardy.
Fun.
Aired on VH1 from 1998 to 2001. It was hosted by Jeff Probst, who is now the host of the reality show Survivor. And I never saw that, thank goodness.
Which one? The Survivor or Rock and Roll
Rock
Jeopardy?
Rock and Roll Jeopardy.
From 1984 to 1990, contestants' winnings were capped at $75,000. Any money earned over that amount was donated to a charity chosen by the winner. The cap was eventually raised and then eliminated completely.
The Jeopardy theme song is called Think. That's terrible. And was composed by Merv Griffin as a lullaby for his son. That's even more terrible.
But it's kind of sweet. Jeopardy champions like Ken Jennings, James Holzhauer, Matt Amodio, and Amy Schneider have gone on winning streaks that highlight their intelligence, strategic abilities, and fine motor skills all at the same time. While these champs get many of the questions right, sometimes they prove to be valuable.
Okay, so here's the part that needs some explaining.
Okay.
And you very, very politely and amazingly offered to be a guinea pig. Because I found 25 questions that those four of the most winning people on Jeopardy missed related to history.
That's the key, folks.
They were history questions that these four geniuses and amazing players missed. Now, I will be honest, I only got three or four of these right.
Ooh.
So they're very hard. And you have agreed to, you've not seen these, and we're going to ask you as if you had just rung in to try and answer.
Yeah.
So the number to beat is three. And you can play along at home too. I'm willing to admit that I'm a dumb guy and I did not know these. I knew like the Civil War one.
This is what I get for not lining up a guest this week.
That's right. So the category is Jesus and Nero.
Okay.
And the answer is Nero blamed Rome's Christians for this 64 AD disaster and used it as an excuse to persecute them.
What's the music? Aren't you going to do the music?
Oh, no. This is only for Final Jeopardy.
What is Nero's flood?
No, I thought you'd know like the fire.
Fire.
Okay, the category is American poetry, which I never would have chosen. Frank O'Hara's most famous poem is The Day Lady Died, in which he reads about this jazz singer's death in 1959.
Oh, my goodness.
See, I guessed a jazz singer, but I didn't guess the right one.
Who is... I don't know who is, and it's, yeah.
Billie Holiday.
Oh.
See, that one I was like, I probably could have guessed that on if I had five guesses.
Right. I guess I wouldn't have thought that was jazz, but
yeah.
Okay.
Category, novels by character.
Okay.
Yuri, Uncle Kolya, and Lara.
Say it again. What's the question?
The category is novels by character. So these are characters in a novel, and you have to guess the novel. Yuri, Uncle Kolya, K-O-L-Y-A, and Lara.
Oh, I have no idea.
So you know it's Russian. Or you could assume it's Russian. Dr. Zhivago.
Oh, okay.
I guess that one wrong. I guessed a different.
How are
Russian
we doing,
novel.
Folks? Anyone three for three?
Category. They are. They should be on Jeopardy. Because these were, again, the four most winningest people ever missed these questions. Category, Queen Victoria. Given this new anesthetic to inhale, Queen Victoria felt little or no pain in 1853 when she delivered her eighth child.
Oh.
So new anesthetic.
What is, and see, I should know the name of medicine.
So I thought you might get this.
I know. One. What is, I don't know.
Chloroform.
Ooh, well, that sounds terrible.
It does. And they actually, I
wouldn't have guessed that.
I was looking for more information and there's like five or six people that invent this at the same time in like the 1820s and 30s.
And here I thought it was used to like kill people.
Yeah, knock them out.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Okay, this is one that I got right. Category, the Civil War. On July 2nd, 1861, the Union attacked the Confederates near a stone bridge crossing this creek in the first battle of it.
So it's the battle name?
The Battle of, yes.
The Battle of Men.
July. That's your answer?
That's my answer. What is?
The First Battle of Bull Run.
Uh-huh. Oh, there you go.
And see, I'm curious if they would have accepted Manassas.
Okay.
Manassas Creek. So I'm ahead of you 1-0 at this point.
category
category journalists. I hate the way this is worded, or else I think you might have gotten it. Often called the first war, these... Crimean War reporter William Howard Russell preferred Special One.
I have.
So a journalist covering a war.
I don't know.
See, I hate the way that's worded. What is a correspondent?
Oh.
A special correspondent as opposed to a war correspondent.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right.
Category, American history. On June 1st, 1660, Mary Dyer, one of this religious sect's Boston martyrs, was hanged on Boston Commons.
What is, or who is, I don't know. Oh, he's handing me the answer.
Who are the Quakers?
The Quakers. Boston.
Okay. And I wanted to know more about this.
So the Boston Martyrs is the name given in Quaker tradition to three English members of the Society of Friends, Marmaduke Stevenson, William Robinson, and Mary Dyer, and to the barbarian friend William Ledra, who were condemned to death and executed by public hanging for their religious beliefs under the legislature of the Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1659, 1660, and 1661. Several other friends lay under sentence of death at Boston in the same period, but had their punishments commuted to that of being whipped out of the colony from town to town. The hanging of Mary Dyer on the Boston gallows in 1660s marked the beginning of the end of the Puritan theocracy and New England independence from English rule. In 1661, King Charles II explicitly forbade Massachusetts from executing anyone for professing Quakerism. In 1684, England revoked the Massachusetts Charter, sent over a royal governor to enforce English laws. In 1686 and in 1689, passed a broad toleration act.
Those pilgrims were very, very tolerant people.
Yeah, right.
All right. And I would not have gotten that one right.
Good to know.
Let's see. Category celebrities. Now, okay. I think you might get this one. I got this one right. This inductee into the Video Hall of Fame sold 17 million copies of a video cassette she released in 1982. Celebrities, video cassettes, 1982.
Oh, man. So my husband would get this right. He's going to be ashamed that I don't know the answer. What's the answer?
Jane Fonda.
Oh.
Her exercise tapes.
Oh, okay. Got it. That's great.
All right. So I have two right at this point.
Thanks for keeping tabs.
Category. This one, if I'd thought about it, I might have gotten. And if you think about it, you might get it. Category. The first winner. In 1903, Maurice Guderian was its first winner in 94 hours, 33 minutes, 14 seconds. First winner, 1903. Maurice Guerin, 94 hours. So it's not a marathon.
Right.
So that was my first thought, was like the Boston Marathon.
What is longer than a marathon? Triathlon. Close. No, I don't know.
The Tour de France.
Oh,
See, if you think about it, but you don't have time, you got to read in and answer the question.
He's trying to give me clues here, too, folks. He's trying to act them out, but he's acting them out behind a microphone and at a table, which is not helping.
Because I want to beat you, but I want to beat you like 4-3 or 3-2.
Sorry.
Category Route 66, and that's ROOT, the root of it, of the matter, not like
the actual 66. Route 66.
Modern auto safety took a big step in 1966, as LBJ signed bills mandating seatbelts and rupture-resistant these. And it's not tires, because that's what I was thinking.
What are airbags?
Nope, fuel tanks.
Yes, we don't want those to rupture, do we?
Yeah. Categories. I totally got this one wrong, and I shouldn't have. Category holidays and observances. Constitution Day is September 17th. This related set is celebrated every December 15th.
Oh.
So it's related to the Constitution.
Flag Day? I don't know.
Well, that's actually a good guess. What is the Bill of Rights?
Whoa, what is the Bill of Rights?
I didn't know they had their own separate day. Yeah. Category, tough three-letter words. This Latin word meaning thus begins Virginia's state motto. See, I don't know Virginia's state motto.
I don't know.
Sic, S-I-C.
Oh.
Sic semper tyrannis. Thus always to tyrants.
That is a hard three-letter word.
Yeah. Category 20th century Americans. I only got one of these two. These names of the original Mercury astronauts who orbited the Earth in May 1962 and May 1963 are also occupations. So their last names are occupations.
Oh, don't know.
I got one of them. Scott Carpenter.
Okay.
And I could not think of the other one. Gordon Cooper. Who can think of this that quickly?
Yeah.
Category, American history.
Ooh, here we go.
I had no idea this one. A 1975 New York Daily News headline after this man opposed a federal bailout, his name, to city drop dead. Because you can always count on the New York Daily News for a good headline.
I don't know.
Gerald Ford.
Oh, interesting. Good.
Category, phrases and expressions.
Good whole headline.
And I had no idea this one. In a 1901 novel, a girl is seized by a Frenchman and, quote, perhaps carried off to this dreadful destiny.
Marriage. What is marriage?
That's a good guess. A Fate Worse Than Death.
Oh, there we go.
Is that the name of the book? I've never heard of it. Category: The Franklin Institute. Beethoven and Mozart wrote for this instrument that Ben Franklin created, which he said gave him the greatest personal satisfaction of all his inventions.
Hmm.
You kind of know a little bit of my music.
Yeah. What is? And you gave me the glass harmonica.
You could have
said, I feel like you've brought this up before, though.
I kind of think we might have talked about it, but I couldn't remember this. I was like, what did he invent that was musical?
So everyone knows the eerie tinkling notes of the aquarium movement in Camille Saint-Saëns' Symphony for Children, the Carnival of the Animals, even if we can't name the music. But few people realize that the instrument which creates the otherworldly sound, also used in some renditions of the Harry Potter film, was invented by Benjamin Franklin while living in London in 1761. Franklin was inspired to create his glass harmonica after hearing an English friend, Edward Delaval, playing a tune on wine glasses filled with water. Delaval was using the tried and tested technique familiar to anyone who's run out of things to say in a bar, of running a wet finger around the rim of a wine or beer glass to produce high-pitched singing. Franklin was convinced he could do better. That's a good friend to have at a bar, right? Yes. With his typical ingenuity and attention to detail, he drew up an elaborate design and commissioned a London glassblower, Charles James, to create the first glass harmonica. Franklin's harmonica, also known as the glass harmonica, was made, so it's an armonica, because it sounds the same, folks, but it was renamed a glass harmonica, was made from 37 glass bowls of varying thickness and sizes threaded horizontally on an iron spindle, which could be turned by a foot pedal. By moistening their fingers with water, a player could produce up to 10 notes or chords at a time. The bowls were color-coded for different notes. Franklin was delighted with the results. Of all my inventions, he later said, the glass harmonica has given me the greatest personal satisfaction. Franklin's instrument enjoyed its world premiere in 1762 and became hugely popular throughout Europe, inspiring compositions by celebrated musicians, including Mozart.
Who knew?
That's a good one. See, pastimes of very brilliant people.
And I love that he thinks that was like his best thing that he did.
I know.
Well, his best invention.
Fun, yes.
All right. And I did not know the answer to that one. Category, the damn bill. A 1973 act of Congress approved funding for a replacement dam at American Falls on this river in the Northwest. See, I misread this and I thought, oh, the American Falls, that's part of Niagara Falls, isn't it? But Northwest. So what river?
I don't know our river's name. What
in,
is?
In the Northwest. It's not the Columbia.
Nothing.
It's connected to the Columbia.
Oh, I don't know.
What is the snake?
Oh, okay.
So some dam on the Snake River. Category, word origins. We've done word origins on the show, but not, but not this word. This condition was thought to arise from an excess of black bile, the origin of its name.
I don't know.
See, I was guessing Black Death or the plague, but it's melancholia.
Oh, okay. Remember, folks, these are questions or answers that folks got wrong.
Got wrong. I'm at two.
Okay.
Category, the Goldbergs. Begins with gold or ends with berg. The Good Earth, and that's in quotation marks, released in 1937 after his death, was the first film with the name of this MGM production head in the credits. So the head of MGM, who knows the head of MGM?
I don't know.
Who is Irving Thalberg? Never heard of him.
Somebody know.
Category, ballet.
Okay.
Your daughter's in ballet.
She is.
The creators of 1943's Fancy Free called each other Lenny and Jerry, Leonard Bernstein, and this choreographer.
I don't know.
Who is Jerome Robbins? Category, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. This alliterative name for a hangout of Western movies extras made the news in 1940 when one cowboy gunned down another for real. And I guarantee you don't know it because who's ever heard of this? What is Gower Gulch?
Oh my goodness.
So I had to learn more about this.
Sounds interesting.
It does sound interesting.
So at the corner of Sunset and Gower, there's a strip mall that looks like it might have been a Western set in a past life. Signs for Baskin-Robbins, Starbucks, and Supercuts hover beneath a larger one emblazoned in Western lettering with the words Gower Gulch. Other signs falsely advertise such frontier businesses as Livery Forge and Stable, a Sayer, and Cartwright's. But the Gower Gulch was never a Western site. It was the hangout of real cowboys waiting to be hired as working extras in Hollywood Western. That's kind of funny. They're just like standing on the corner all dressed up
as cowboys.
The Gower Gulch earned its name in 1940 after a couple of these Hollywood cowboys riled each other up in an unscripted standoff, putting one in the ground and sending the other to trial on homicide charges. The intersection became headquarters for a cluster of former cowboys in the mid-1930s when the Columbia Drugstore stood at its southeast corner. Here, at almost any time of day, one could find 25 to 50 of the cowboys loitering between picture jobs. The drugstore had become a congregating point for a practical reason. It had a phone booth that the manager would allow the cowboys' extras to use in order to dial up central casting switchboards at all hours, checking on what studios or gigs were calling out. And Jerome B. Blackjack Ward was one of these cowboys, and he came up with a reputation for being a seasoned rawhide from the 19-teens when he had supposedly been Pancho Villa's right-hand man.
I don't buy that.
Since then, he'd taken up working as a horse opera actor besides other Finland cowpokes. Oh, is there more? Oh, yeah, there's even more, folks.
We got to get to the shootout.
Sorry. Okay, on one afternoon in 1940, Blackjack encountered his arch enemy, John Ainsworth Tyke, Johnny Tyke, outside the Columbia Drugstore.
"You've been fooling around my girl again,"
the short and wiry Ward said accusingly as he swaggered up the tall, powerfully built Tyke.
"What makes you so sure she's yours?"
Johnny countered contemptuously.
"'Pears like she cottons up to me."
The babble of conversation among the cowboys died as suddenly as though an assistant director had just yelled,
"Quiet on the set."
On a silent cue, they formed a circle around the two men, for it was apparent to everyone there was going to be a fight, and one of the two contestants was going to have his hide hung up in defeat.
"Julie's mine, and I'm going to see things stay that way,"
Ward said icily.
"You better go easy, Ward,"
Tyke snarled.
"You're grabbing the branding iron by the hot end."
"And?"
"You, Johnny Tyke?"
Ward responded in a voice as cold as the 45 he suddenly produced from out of nowhere.
"There are six steps to hell, and according to what I know of your lousy record, you've taken all six of them."
At that, Tyke let out a roar of rage and lunged fearlessly for the gun, but Blackjack fired his first shot, catching him in the shoulder and knocking him to the ground.
"That was for the first step, lion," Ward informed.
Ward informed the fallen Tyke, and then in a loud, clear voice that every man present could hear, he proceeded to recite his six steps to hell, punctuating each one with a shot.
"2, horse stealing. 3, woman stealing. 4, cowardice. 5, double-crossing a friend. And 6, murder."
Blackjack had shot Tyke in broad daylight in the middle of Hollywood and in front of a crowd of witnesses.
And he got away with it.
Did he?
There was a jury trial, and he claimed self-defense that Johnny Tyke had pulled a knife.
Oh, to a gun.
And then he also claimed insanity.
Oh, okay.
And he walked.
Wow. And no cameras to be around. I mean, that just sounds like right out of a movie script right there, folks.
Isn't that amazing?
See, from children's bedtime to Hollywood cowboys shootouts.
So Gower Gulch.
That's a good one.
Who would have ever known that?
Who knows? That's
so
crazy.
So we've learned today that neither you or I should ever be on Jeopardy.
Never. So never even passed my mind.
In retrospect, I lied. I got 2 right.
Oh, okay. That's better.
So we hope you did better at home.
Yes. But, thanks for joining us.
Have a good week, and we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.